Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, listener supported in all we do. It is the 17th day of November, 2011. It's officially cold. Snow has been blowing around here all day long, and I have finally broken down and broken out the little propane canister heat buddy. So if somewhere along in the program I begin to sound a little like this and begin talking about things like I remember when we went to the carnival and I dropped my candy apple and I couldn't have another one. I was sad. You'll know that the carbon monoxide is kicking in, and I'd probably better do something. But it's drafty enough back here in the nerve center of the Head On Radio Network that I don't think that will be an issue. No, Marty, not Thorn in the Achilles Heel Thursday. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday for a reason. Thorn in the Side Thursday was suggested by our good buddy, of course, Bjorn Gobler, who also goes by Horzac, H-O-R-Z-A-C, over at YouTube, where you will find a compendium of horn clips, rants, ravings, monologues, that you can send round and about to folks as you might see fit. Yeah. And Thorn in the Side Thursday is named after a passage, an event, a segment from Joseph Heller's classic work, Catch-22. And I can't remember if it was General Cathcart or General Dreidel or, no, Colonel Cathcart, General Dreidel, or General P.P. Peckham. I think it was Colonel Cathcart, who was constantly making lists, and it was a bifurcated page, and down one side he had thorns in the side, and in the other side he had feathers in his cap. And he kept account of his paranoid little military life that way. So that's where Thorn in the Side Thursday comes from. And it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Sometimes the thorn in the side feels like a daggum dagger. As I was driving around late this afternoon, I try to just get out of the studio. I come into the studio, I read all day long, and then in the early afternoon I come in and more or less camp out in the studio. And then late in the afternoon, I try to go out and just get out of the studio a little bit and sort of breathe a little fresh air to the extent that fresh air is something available here in almost level West Bicod, Virginia, Appalachia, Stan. And in the course of doing that today, wait, where was it? Maybe the carbon monoxide's already kicking in. Oh, yeah, I was listening to the radio, and they were talking on National Petroleum Radio, or maybe it was BBC World Service, I'm not sure what. But they were talking about the fact that with the increasing economic uncertainty, that they are seeing a rise. It is still negligible, but seeing a rise nonetheless, of that great curse of all European societies, right-wing nationalism. And it reminded me that last night we talked a little bit about the fact that when one sees fascist behavior, it is okay to refer to it as fascist behavior. We can use the F word if it falls within the textbook and dictionary definition as enunciated by the inventor of fascism, and you know who he was. He said fascism is more properly referred to as corporatism. It is the marriage of the power of the state in supporting the power of the corporations. It's really not complicated. But I heard the report on the radio talking about, in particular, a report, I guess, coming out of Denmark today or in the last few days, noting the rise of right-wing fascist nationalists and, of course, their goal. They're hoarding ammunition, they are hoarding firearms, and they are calling for what they refer to in Danish as a race war. Really? The Danes? A race war? Against who? The Flemish? The Germans? The Italians? No, of course not. No, the little right-wing goose-stepping fascists, the eternal curse of all European societies, they want a race war with the Muslims. Never mind the fact that Islam is not a race, that there are many different ethnicities that happen to be Islamic and happen to live in Europe. No, never mind. They want a race war with the Muslims. So thereby we understand that there is no... The United States has not cornered the market on bigotry and stupidity. But it got me thinking. And it sort of called me back to something that David in Tennessee, my head writer, had sent me overnight. And, of course, to something that I remarked upon last night. They had that little hate fest in Nashville, Tennessee, recently, in which they, these right-wing nationalists of our own variety, had they pissing and moaning about the Muslims and the Islam and the Sharia law, and they stood up and cheered, gave a standing ovation to a member of the Tennessee State Legislature who wants to throw all the Muslims out of the United States military. We have a problem in this country, and it is getting worse. And it is fascist in nature. But I was thinking about that at the same time that I was considering this little piece of video that came my way from David in Tennessee. Our old buddy, Pat Robertson. We've got a Pat problem. We've got two Pat stories tonight. One of them's Pat Robertson, the other one is not. You can probably guess who it is. Now, just take a minute and sort of absorb the crazy as it comes roaring out of your computer speakers, or your smartphone, or any number of other devices on which you may be listening to this program at this point. We're getting around. I am sort of, well, I'm plumb whipped to give you an adequate description of what you're about to hear, so I'm just going to let it be what it is. Is that all right?
But Terrell says, I have a chess set with men based on the Crusades. We've had the set in our house for over 15 years. My wife now says we should have nothing Muslim in our house. I say that it's just a chess set, and it's okay. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it is the...
Okay, we're going to have to wait just a minute. We will let Marion Pat Robertson spew his crazy, but we're going to have some context first. Do you remember... do you recall last night the story of the Christian school teacher who repeatedly masturbated in front of his class? I had an email earlier today saying, how could it be anything but repeatedly, Bob? Oh, you're a quick bunch, you are. Start. Yeah. He was an algebra teacher. Now, in this particular clip, Terrell, whose letter is read by Christy on the 700 Club, Terrell's wife doesn't want to have anything Muslim in their house. Sure as hell hope they don't play guitar, because that's got to go. And I sure as hell hope that they don't... Well, I mean, they're watching the 700 Club, so there ain't no beer in there, right? Nor no liquor, nor no wine. Because the operative ingredient in all of those things is alcohol. Right? Yeah, anything... That al part, that's an article in Arabic. Alcohol. And, of course, if they've got any children, they are going to school and suffering through algebra. Gotta get all that Muslim stuff out of the house, because it's ungodly. But in the main, this is a concern about a chess set, a carved chess set that has sat in Terrell's house for 15 years or so. And it's, well, let's just get this in its full context.
I have a chess set with men based on the Crusades. We've had the set in our house for over 15 years. My wife now says we should have nothing Muslim in our house. I say that it's just a chess set, and it's okay. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, if it's the Crusade, the Crusaders are killing the Muslims.
The Crusaders are killing the Muslims. You hear him laugh? Oh, he loves that blood shedding for Jesus, don't he? So what's the big deal? History moment. The Crusaders didn't win the Crusades, Pat. That's why the Kingdom of Jerusalem's flag is not flying over Jerusalem. That's why Islam is the dominant religion in the area. The Crusaders lost. They've lost badly. But in the course of losing, they didn't just kill the Muslims. They killed the Jews. And they killed the other Christians. And they killed each other. Because they were barbarians with nothing better to do. And that was the whole reason behind the Crusades, was the Pope looking up and realizing that he had all these itinerant knights and warriors wandering around Europe. You know, one knight on horse was approximately, from an economic standpoint in, say, the 12th century, the support of one knight on horseback with all the armor and accoutrement and the support staff had roughly the same economic impact as the price of one Bradley tank on ours. They were expensive to maintain. And dangerous to have around, because, remember, they weren't very good at that art of word-knowing. Or that art of thinking. They were barbarians with a religion. You might recall the fact that Charlemagne bemoaned to the end of his days the fact that he never could quite get a handle on that whole writing thing. And he said it was because he had spent all his life wielding a sword and could not, therefore, wield a writing instrument. I want to hear Pat laugh some more. That's maniacal. That is a psychotic laugh. That's somebody get the Aricept or whatever it is that they're using for... a Thorazine dart in the neck. Crazy.
I say that it's just a chess set, and it's okay. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it was the Crusaders are killing the Muslims. So, what's the big deal?
What's the big deal?
A Muslim in your house, you're not worshiping Allah. This is a clash that took place. Crusaders went to reclaim the holy places from the infidels, from the Muslims that have taken them over. So, I mean, that's historic. I don't see anything wrong with that.
All right, let's jump to...
Yeah, thank you, Media Matters, for... God, I love them. I love them, and my heart goes out to them and bleeds for them. I hope that they are getting massive funding in. Because, yeah, they really do. They have to rotate interns. On Monday, you listen to intern A listens to Limbaugh for 3 hours, and intern B listens to Hannity, and intern C listens to Beck, and intern D listens to Pat Robertson, and then everything swaps on Tuesday, and because if I just feel bad for him, I don't know. I don't know how long the internships are at Media Matters, but what a brutal bit of duty! Oh, they're killing them! What's the big deal? So at least Pat had the common good sense not to tell them to go throwing out the algebra books, nor it's the holiday season. A lot of people like that date nut roll. Dates come from, come on. No, they don't come from Lombardy. And they don't come from the West Country. Oh, they come from the Middle East. Oh, there are so many things you would have to get rid of. I mean, Terrell with his chest set, and, you know, I suspect that Mrs. Terrell is probably just pissed off at, because Terrell's always wanting to be the Crusaders when they're playing chess. And she's tired of being having her caliph put in checkmate. Oy. Stupid, stupid people in a increasingly frighteningly stupid, stupid country. Questions coming in. Now, I'm theoretically in the chat room via the side door as usual. But I am getting notes. I've gotten a note from Kath in Canada. I wanted you to know we're not able to get into the chat room at all. Both doors are closed, and we tried to jiggle the windows, but no luck. Yeah, don't break the glass. It's winter. Lottie, our chat room moderator, also noting, none of us can get into the chat. The login is saying that our username or password is invalid. It was my understanding that sometime overnight, someone from Add-On Interactive, who is the purveyor of the chat room, was going to be trying to get in there, so try. Sorry. But it's really weird. What I do here is I just close out and then I leave at the end of the evening, and then I just reload the page and I'm in there. I was kind of wondering why I was all by myself. You know, I walked in earlier and I said, "Hey, anybody here?" Yeah. Kind of empty. Where is everybody? It was beginning to feel like a Twilight Zone episode. But I'm there and you're not. Betsy can't get into chat either. Oy vey. Oy vey. Do you see the growing trend, not just in this country, but in the world? There are people out there, and they want a fresh round of crusades. Badly. But the thing is, as David in Tennessee is noting, meanwhile in Germany, a small but violent right-wing nationalist group was busted today. Maybe it was the Germans and not the Danes. 10 to 12 folks responsible for 2 or 3 murders of some brown folks. Well, it turns out they've been under the radar for 15-plus years. How, you might ask? Well, a well-thought-out police sergeant was a member and leading the anti-hate detail within the police on the chase of the wild goose. The good Sarge had been questioned about his politics twice before, and by the way, his neighbors feared him and referred to him as Little Adolf. At least they caught the gang this time through. But for when you're dealing with fascists, for every cockroach you stomp, you know that there are 100 more behind the baseboards. That's the way it is with fascists. And as we watch the economic situation in Europe grow progressively worse, or regressively worse would probably be the more appropriate terminology, it's worth remembering that this time they don't want to go crusading in somebody else's land. They want a general bloodletting in their own. And in Germany, for instance, there is it's a result of alliances forged in the fading of the Ottoman Empire and the Sublime Porte, and a time when European monarchies referred to Turkey as the sick man. And the Turks did a deal with the devil. They had been pretty much in Britain's hip pocket for a great long while. But a variety of events conspired to make the Turks turn toward Germany in the days prior to the First World War. See how the First World War is still relevant? Yeah, thought so. And they formed an alliance with Germany, and so there is a massive minority Turkish presence in Germany to this day. I met some in Washington, D.C. a couple of months back. Wonderful people. Had a lovely conversation. And in France, there are... France had their little colony, remember? It was a nasty little Algerian war of independence. The film about it is a classic. So there's a substantial Arabic population in France. The United Kingdom has its post-colonial population of Pakistanis and Indians. Not, of course, the Indians, not all of whom are Muslim, but some are, and the Pakistanis who are Muslim. And lo and behold, these right-wing groups want a bloodletting on European soil. I guess we're far enough removed from August of 1914, and enough generations have passed that the lessons of people like Wilfred Owen and, what was his first name? I can't remember, but his last name was Cesson. Have gone by. And words like Marne and Somme and Ardennes and Leuven or Louvain, as discussed last week, are dust covered. And the dust covers a layer of dried blood. And what a pity, because these nasty little fascists, given their opportunity, will once again burn Europe to the ground. Recall, it was a white nationalist who unleashed such heartbreak and misery just a few short months ago in Norway. Placid, peaceful, peace-loving Norway. They're on the move, folks, and you would do well to keep an eye out for them. Sorry, I'm also trying to keep up with the information about the chat room. Texas Betsy, our blogger, said, tell people we'll be chatting in the Skype room instead, please. and they can add texas.betsy and get in there via Skype. Yeah, there were a lot of bad ideas that came out of the period between 1913 and 1921. Gallipoli, the Balfour Declaration. Lots. Meanwhile, a multimillionaire, if not a billionaire, who has made his fortune riding on the backs of the superstitious, the ignorant, the heartbroken, and the desperate. Well, the idea of a bloodletting...
It's just a chess set.
The idea of a bloodletting, another crusade, well, it's just a...
What's the big deal?
Yeah, what's the big deal? Good God. What a monster. And I warned you a little bit last night about the coming sleaze fest that would sort of vomit out of the right-wing megaphone. And it's here. It's here. I straight up warned you that this was coming last night in talking about, oh, who was that that creeps op-ed that we read from World Magazine? Yeah. Yeah. It's found its way. Oh, just listen.
You know, this horrible thing is going on right now at Penn State. To me, it's like, once again, it's like God is pulling the blanket back and saying, I'm going to expose your whole society for how corrupt it is. Even your most cherished football team has been corrupted by immorality. It seems like it's everywhere in our society, Pat. We're declining. We're collapsing.
Told you we had two paths.
We're financially bankrupt because we're morally bankrupt.
I think it's exactly right. Again, as I mentioned in the book, if you take another manifestation of a sinking society is the pandemic cheating, whether it's in marriage or in tax returns or in business or in schools and in among teachers and students and in marriage, everything. And I think that's very true. Let's take this Penn State thing. You know, of course, it's a horrible disgrace for someone who is a national icon, Joe Paterno, to have remained silent in the face of this horrors that were going on. But, you know, these horrors, there's an organization that marches in the Gay Pride Parade in New York called the North American Man-Boy Love Association, which advocated voluntary sex along the lines of exactly what was going on at Penn State. And we had many of our political icons have marched in that parade right behind that NAMBLA float. And this is America. Now, that would not have occurred in the 1950s in America. It would not have happened. People would have said, what kind of idiocy and insanity is this? But this is now, I mean, homosexual marriage is now the civil rights cause of the decade.
Again, thanks to Media Matters. You got that? Pat Buchanan, who should have been sent out to pasture in the nursing home somewhere a long time ago. Pat Buchanan, who, if you recall the discussion Monday with Stanley Cutler, was one of Richard Nixon's chief henchmen in pulling together a specific group to attack the perceived enemies of the president. Pat Buchanan, who was on this weird little fifth-tier right-wing radio show, True News Radio with Rick Wiles. Oh. He's out flogging a book about the end of white America. Pat Buchanan has to haul up an organization that was never really much in the way of an organization, NAMBLA. The only people who remember NAMBLA are right-wingers who apparently, probably, masturbated over it. Maybe in algebra class. But I told you this was coming, and lo and behold, here it is. The right wing will do everything in its power to blame homosexuality for a crime that has nothing to do with homosexuality. They are presently flogging Jerry Sandusky in the press for being gay when A, he denies it, and B, has been heterosexually married for decades and has a ton of children. Now, that's not to say a gay man can't get married, but it is highly unlikely that he is gay. He is a pedophile. He likes to have sex with children. It's a monstrous proclivity. And one that when we catch it, we need to put them away and make sure they're just never get around civilized society again, because it's incurable. It is incurable. Certainly, if proven true, the allegations against Sandusky prove that it's incurable. But never mind the data. Never mind the evidence. Pat Buchanan, who wants to return to the 1950s, and all of the filth and the hate and the bloodshed and the misery and the bigotry and the prejudice and the institutional racism and sexism that goes with it. Pat Buchanan just makes it up as he goes along. This might prove a little, this might prove a bit hateful on my part, but I'm going to say it anyway. I badly want to still be on the air. I want the horn to be around when we get to announce the death of Pat Buchanan of natural causes. The problem is that may well mean we'll have to be on the air for another 20 or 30 years because evil is a preservative, and that old bastard is not going to go quietly, quickly, or anytime soon. But I want to celebrate it when it happens. And by the way, just to let you know, the chat room is back up and running in case you want to visit. So that's a starting place for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And how else do you describe these monstrosities but thorns in the side? They are certainly a hindrance to having any kind of enlightened dialogue or discussion about monstrous problems that confront this culture. And it's not just Pat Buchanan. I've got a story here in the stack from a few days back. Over at the Chicago Board of Trade, the Occupy protesters were met with a flurry of McDonald's applications being thrown down upon them. Just today, the chairman of AIG proved again how clueless he is. AIG was bailed out by the U.S. Treasury, you know, you and me, to the tune of $182.3 billion, right? So he took to the air on Bloomberg TV, naturally, and said, it's lost on them. They think why are you bailing out Wall Street and not Main Street? You have to have a view as to what would have happened if Wall Street had been allowed to just implode. I think it would have been devastating for our whole economy, and that would have been far worse for Main Street than what did happen. Of course, that's not what Occupy is saying, not at all, not in the least. But that doesn't matter because, of course, the 1% will rebrand this argument any way that they see fit. Because they're that way. And they have a vested interest in protecting their 1% and trying to squeeze out more. There's that moment again. They want it all. So that's where we start with this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Your thoughts, of course, are more than welcome. You know the numbers, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333, email to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And with regard to the toll-free numbers, I got to tell you, I am looking at I'm looking at the numbers with Boss Man Wayne, and there's a possibility the toll-free number may be going away. Just trying to cut some corners and cut some costs to stay on the air. So it may be we go to strictly a direct dial number, and I'd be curious, if you want to drop an email to me, I would be curious to know how many of you need the toll-free number in order to interact with the program. That would be very, very helpful. Just the same old email address, just let me know. Because, well, last month was grim, this month is grim, and looking grimmer. We are at the 17th of November, which is over halfway through the month. I don't know where the month went. And nowhere near, well, yeah, nowhere near the halfway point of what we need to be doing in fundraising. And an October and a November and a December and a January with declining revenues like this. And, yeah, somewhere something's got to give. And it looks like maybe the first thing might be the toll-free number. So, just let me know. I would appreciate it. But we will be back after the break. Coming up, we have, of course, the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. That's because it's Thursday, and Thursday makes, and that makes, well, one of my favorite days of the week because I love the Green News Report. There's so much good work being done by Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And they work on a shoestring, too. So, sit back, relax, and if you want to get involved with the program, fire up the lines, and we'll get conversant. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yeah. Looking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, November 17, 2011.
What did you know about the situation at Solyndra? When did you know it, and how did you act on that information, if at all?
House Republicans and their coal and oil industry allies are manufacturing a scandal.
Political theater in the House over the Solyndra bankruptcy.
I share the view of your prime minister and most scientists in the world that climate change is a real problem and that human activity is contributing to it.
Obama talks climate change, but only in Australia. It's official, the weather is getting weirder. Plus,
and all you need to do is reduce that air down to a certain temperature and you release that moisture.
Harvesting water from the desert air.
All of that and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
As I said before, if Solyndra really is the litmus test, we have a much bigger problems on our hands.
Yes, we do, Congressman Cliff Stern. We have a much bigger problems on our hand. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, as we go to air today, a bit of breaking news out of the House hearings on Solyndra. Congressman Cliff Stearns, Republican from Florida, the chair of the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee, has called for the resignation of Energy Secretary Stephen Chu.
Yes, he says the president should replace Stephen Chu for mismanagement of the loan guarantee program. But we'll get to more of that kabuki theater in a moment. First, it's not your imagination. The weather is getting weirder. Princeton University just released the results from the first ever climate study focusing on variations in daily weather conditions, confirming that indeed, day-to-day weather around the world has grown increasingly erratic and extreme, including significant changes in rainfall patterns around the world, just as climate scientists predicted would occur with the documented rise in global temperatures.
Good day, everybody. I am thrilled to be down under.
President Obama is on his first official visit to Australia as president to announce that the U.S. is expanding its military footprint in the Pacific. But in a joint press conference with Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard, President Obama also actually said the words climate change out loud for the first time in a very long time. President Obama addressed Australia's new carbon tax, the first in the world, and the need for all nations to cut carbon emissions to avoid dangerous climate destabilization.
It's my strong belief that industries, utilities, individual consumers, we're all going to have to adapt how we use energy and how we think about carbon.
Nice to hear him doing that down under. Has he done it up here lately?
No, he has not.
Well, that's odd.
As we mentioned earlier, on Capitol Hill, Republican lawmakers grilled Energy Secretary Stephen Chu today, the sole witness at a tense hearing on the bankruptcy of U.S. solar panel maker Solyndra.
Today we are focused on the loss of $535 million of taxpayers' money.
Rarely, if ever, have I seen a more mismanaged program than the Solyndra loan guarantee.
Solyndra received a $500 million taxpayer loan guarantee from the Department of Energy only to go belly up 2 months ago after a crash in solar panel prices. Republicans are attempting to portray the loan guarantee as illegally influenced by politics for the benefit of an Obama campaign donor and have now called for Chu to be fired. Democrats have criticized the Republican investigation as a manufactured scandal for political gain.
Instead of conducting a serious inquiry into the facts relating to Solyndra and the lessons we can learn from this case, the majority to date has focused on firing partisan broadsides at the Obama administration.
Democrats pointed out that there were also major Republican investors in Solyndra, criticizing the selective release of White House emails giving the appearance of wrongdoing, and noting that tens of billions of taxpayer dollars and loan guarantees have gone to the nuclear industry. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu defended the selection of Solyndra and the loan guarantee program as a whole.
When it comes to the clean energy race, America faces a simple choice: compete or accept defeat. I believe we can and must compete.
Hearings looking into this incident seem completely appropriate to me. What seems inappropriate is that they are being entirely politicized. You've got a situation where Bush administration had started this loan program. Many of his donors, the Walton family, were behind Solyndra.
Yes.
And Republicans are trying to turn this into a fake Democratic scandal.
Yes, but the upshot is, so far, no actual evidence has emerged of any wrongdoing, illegal activity, or any other misconduct.
And that won't matter at all on Fox News.
Finally, lest you think it's all political kabuki theater, innovation is breaking out all over the world. Australian graduate student Edward Lineker won this year's James Dyson Innovation Award for harvesting water from the air.
There's just an abundant resource of water in the air that surrounds us.
His invention is a low-tech, low-cost method to irrigate crops in drought-stricken areas using simple condensation.
Can American companies make a whole lot of money off of it?
Probably not.
Well, then, good luck with your cute little invention that helps poor people, Ed Lineker, down there in Australia. For more on all of the stories that we covered today and those we didn't have time for, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help out the Green News Report. We rely on you to stay on your public airwaves. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
With a lot of Australian news today, this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Minutes before the hour. What a lick that is. What a riff. My goodness gracious, I'd forgotten completely about that. I gotta play that for Ferg. If the speed with which he picked up that little riff that opens Pure Prairie Leads Amy is any indication, he'll have that sometime day after tomorrow. Not me, though. My fingers feel like sausages on a guitar neck. But enough of that. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And let us go straightway to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's happening, man?
Oh, not too much. Yourself?
Hanging on. Sort of did some, I had some winter Tourette's on set when I saw the snow flying today. Yeah. But then again, I saw you noting in the chat room, yeah, it doesn't snow much where you are, but that's not to say it don't get plenty cold.
Oh, yeah. It can get cold. But don't get snow 10 below zero either.
True, but when that wet crap comes in off the Gulf of Mexico at about 38 degrees, it feels like 10 below.
Oh, yeah.
That's some hateful cold.
Absolutely. Couple of things.
Tell me both of them.
First of all, well, actually, more than a couple. How are we different from Mubarak, exactly?
That's a damn fine question. Of course, he had been in power for a jillion years, and he was an autocratic despot. But if you want to ask how the government structure is different, that's going to be a very difficult conversation, Cossack.
Well, not just that. I mean, fine, he was an autocrat. What we have now, we don't have elections; we have coronations.
And we have video game voting.
Correct. So we don't really have what you would call democracy, and we haven't in a long time. So you can't really say that. I mean, that's part of what the Occupy movement is all about, is the fact that money now rules the roost. It always has to a greater or lesser degree. Now it's to a much greater degree. And by the way, thank you for the Wilson sisters and Crazy on You.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Wow. Oh. And the Crazy theme just kind of worked too.
They were, God,
I can see. I remember when they. Well, no, I'm not going to say that because I'm going to get in terrible, terrible trouble.
Oh, go ahead.
No. Can't make me. I remember when they were pretty. See?
Mm.
But no, I remember when that album first came out, and that riff just got all over me, and I have a feeling that I don't know. It'd be something cool. It's something Ferg and I can work on together.
I remember when they were first breaking through up in Canada, where they're from, by the way.
Vancouver.
Yes, sir. And I came down. I was in school up there. Came down here for Christmas break, and I was just prattling off to my friends about this magnificent group called Heart. Have you heard of them? Have you heard of them? Huh? No. Haven't heard them.
I was listening to Molly Hatchet.
I said, no. You've got to hear Heart. They were just fantastic. They still are. After all these years. As you know.
Absolutely. So
anyway, with Mayor Bloomberg, God, what a...
I know, POS.
Yes. Can't say it in nice terms. You know, he's so worried about hygiene. Why doesn't he go down to some of the subway stations and worry about hygiene down there? If he's worried about people peeing in public places, why doesn't he go down there?
Just not sexy enough. And it doesn't serve the 1%'s agenda. We all know that hygiene is a subterfuge, just a pretext in this. I remember the one video that was out there from the rant that I was doing about one night I went off and did a Michael Savage rant, you might remember, about hygiene. There's a YouTube video out there somewhere that you just reminded me of. But look, I mean, he's clueless. Well, no, he's not clueless. That is a grave mistake we make. He is absolutely plugged into what this is about, and he knows damned well whose side he's on, Cossack, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Hint, it ain't ours.
Yep. It's his side, which is the 1% side.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, consequently, this is going to get more and more interesting. Of course, this was the 2-month anniversary. There were supportive Occupy movements all over the country today. Lawsuits have been filed. I just saw in an email of a couple of minutes ago, a lawsuit has been filed against the Oakland Police Department.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I hope to God they're suing Oakland for almost killing that guy.
Well, and pepper spraying the 84-year-old, and pepper spraying the pregnant girl, and pepper spraying the priest, and yeah. Right.
You know, and I was telling people this years ago, that the militarization of the police will lead to no good. And they kept on telling me, well, don't worry, if you're not a criminal, you don't need to. I said, you got to get inside the head of the police. You're either part of this thin blue line, or you're a criminal, or you're about to be a criminal. And that's the way they approach it. It's us and them. They are in charge. And have you ever noticed that most of the time when the cops go into a crowd situation to regain control, that's when everything goes sideways?
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
No, and here's a funny for you. Back in the 70s, when I was back in Belgrade, at the American Embassy, they had a cute little place, the American Bar, where anybody but the locals could go. As long as you were a foreigner, you're in free. And I was sitting around one night with a couple of Germans. This is in the 70s, mind you. And as they got more and more into their cups, they couldn't conceal it. If we were running things, everything would be better.
Well, Germans have a habit of thinking that way.
Oh, yeah. And that's about the way they were expressing themselves. They were perfect English before that, but as they got more and more drunk, you know.
They got more and more Major Hofstadter.
Yeah. You know, if we were running things.
The racket goes up, who cares where it comes down? It's not my concern, says Werner von Braun.
Yeah. I mean.
But that's, you know, that's a little mean. I mean, but there are problems that are busting out all over Europe. And what you have right now is a situation, as Sandra has noted from time to time, where basically the French and the Germans are running the show.
Right.
Which is what they've both been after for a long, long time, and they finally figured out a way to do it together without any Ardennes, Marne, Charleroi, any of that. And it's falling apart because it. I think, and Sandra could probably speak to this better than I, but it was a theoretical failure from the get-go. I mean, people were predicting this the minute that the euro went live, weren't they?
Correct. With good reason. With good reason. You know, it's...
Because you can't have transnational boundaries and have a single currency at the same time.
Correct.
This the euro is failing. Okay, maybe this is historically inaccurate. But the euro is having the troubles it's having and failing for the reasons it's failing for the same reason that any currency issued by, okay, let's play historic what if. If the South had prevailed in its independence bid in the Civil War and had set up a separate country, the Confederacy, its currency would have failed too had they tried to have a unitary Confederate dollar. You know, you'll notice when you see all those antique paper money bills that they're all drawn on various and sundry, you know, the Bank of Richmond, the Bank of Atlanta, the Bank of Montgomery. There was no unified currency.
Absolutely.
But if they had gotten to the point where they tried to have a unified currency in a loose confederation, it would have failed too.
Exactly. And the thing is, as we've already seen, Italy has no sovereignty. Greece has no sovereignty. They have the banksters that Germany has appointed for them running their countries.
Right.
And if you're a sovereign country, you have your own sovereign currency that you can inflate, whatever. But
yeah, the drachma could have gotten out of that mess. The euro couldn't.
Exactly.
As could the lira. As could right.
And the problem of it is the French are now dead in the sights of the Germans. Their bonds are under attack now.
Well, it's all it.
It's
and the thing that I was trying to bring to light in the first 45 minutes or so of the program, Cossack, is that this has no good end because of that swirling, ever-present undercurrent of right-wing, hate-filled extremism that runs through every country. You know, not just Germany, but France. Not just France, but the UK. Of course, the UK still got its sovereign currency. But Denmark? Norway? But it's all there. And if things get bad enough and it bubbles to the surface, there are, in any culture, there are people who will go along to get along and get in line and march behind the first parade that comes by, especially if they are sufficiently appealing to fear and hatred, the two easiest, most easily motivated human emotions. They're dangerous, as noted before, and it's hard to maintain it, but it is awfully good to get them up out of their seats.
Well, that's what you're having with the demonization of the entire Occupy movement, is these people are animals. You know, they want to go out and steal what you have and kill you in the street. That's not what it is. They're complaining that homeless people and the mentally ill and so forth were showing up at the Occupy encampments, and that's why they had to close them. It was another reason why they had to close them, because they were causing problems. You know, and you saw the cute leisure domain they pulled off in New York when the judge originally ruled that they could go back in with their with their tents and tarps and so forth, and then quickly the...
And then a higher court judge, and it's weird. The trial courts of New York are called the Supreme Court.
Right.
But that's the trial court level, so it was a judge underneath that court, or maybe parallel to, that issued the original temporary restraining order, but then a Supreme Court judge who said, no, no, no. But the Supreme Court judge's order is subject to judicial review at an appellate court level.
Correct. Excuse me. Oh.
And it's not going away, Kosak. I think we all agree.
Well, no, and it shouldn't go away. That's the whole problem. It's just that someone made a cute little sign that I agree with, that you can't evict an idea. And that's the whole point. That's what they're trying to do, is shove the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, the genie ain't going back.
Yeah. No, we have to convince you that the horrors you're going through are all your fault. It's not the fault of the banks. It's not, you know, as Herm Cain said, you know, if you're poor, you don't blame the banks, blame yourself if you're not rich. I'm sorry, I don't come from that class.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not from the. I don't think I've ever had lobster for lunch.
No.
Or a hummingbird tongue canapé.
No. And you never will.
Likely not.
You know, it has
kinky. About the kinkiest I get is a little escargot once in a while, or maybe a plate of oysters on the half shell.
Correct. A little bit of oysters or Rockefeller.
Actually, I prefer oysters Bienville. That's our Christmas tradition around here.
Ah.
Yummy, yummy, yummy.
That sounds good. But, you know, that's the whole problem, that they don't seem to understand that there is virtually no upward mobility in our society anymore. You know, the lucky ducky that can grasp the brass ring and go from rags to riches is a fable.
Yeah, the whole Horatio Alger up by your bootstraps. No, we reached that conclusion a long time ago here, Kosak. It's all well and good to tell someone to raise themselves up by their bootstraps, but what do you do when the boot factory is in China?
Correct.
You know, there was that, I don't know if you caught Dr. Bill's chat the other night, but there was one little line that just sort of got all over me like a, I don't know, like poison ivy in that article that he was referencing, where the Indian technocrat was talking about, he said, you know, if we don't make stuff for our own people and make it available to them, and he was talking about high technology and internet stuff and so forth, he said, there's no way we can ever catch China.
Correct.
And in that moment, Kosak, I had a shiver roll over me. Once upon a time, the country to catch was us.
Correct.
And that's gone. That's over. That is not coming back.
No.
It's almost physically impossible to make it come back in the traditional sense of American manufacturing. And if you were listening to the Green News Report, you heard the hissy, the right-wing hissy that was had today, the continuing saga of the manufactured outrage over Solyndra, because of course they don't want that either. They don't want the green economy that could actually put people back to work. They don't want the maglev trains. They don't want the high speed trains on traditional rails. Nope, can't have any of that. The only thing the right wing wants to do is continue to support the 1%, and that's why I don't understand why the teabaggers and just workaday Republicans can't vote their wallets. You know, David in Tennessee just wrote and said, upward mobility? Ha 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 ha! You know, one of those Pat Robertson laughs.
Mm-hmm.
Look, folks, The already up class can get more up, but the rest of us, forget it. Because they don't want it. The day of an America that was upwardly mobile is gone. It ended with the right-wing assault on unions that drove union membership from upwards of 40% to 9.
Right.
You don't have that kind of upward mobility without a solid labor presence. All you can do is tread water and hang on.
Hopefully. That's the
best. Yeah, if you're lucky.
Yeah. That's the best case scenario. And trust me, most of us are dealing with much less than the best case scenario.
Oh, believe me when I say I know. I wouldn't be sitting here talking about whether or not we can get away with eliminating the toll-free number if everything was flush and happy. I wouldn't. You know, we had our bacon saved a couple of times by some pretty large contributions over the course of a few months from a contributor who wishes to remain anonymous. Everybody else plugging away with their, you know, plugging in with their ten dollars, some 50, some 100, some a couple, and there are a few who have sent a couple of hundred, 500, and more, without which we would not be here right now. This is fingernails on the ledge stuff. So yeah, I get it big time. You know, we would be done were it not for the people who generously and determinedly continue to contribute month in and month out. And every single one of those contributions, I know, is a sacrifice. And it represents something that someone is going without.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I sit here in a very humbled, but at the same time, very conscious place. And as a consequence, you just don't know. You don't know how long any of it can go on. And it's not just, you know, it's not just us. It's the guys who do underground mining. I was just talking to one on the street the other day. He's no union worker. He's not a member of the UMWA. He's making okay money, but his company's about to be gobbled up probably by Alpha, at which point his money will go down. But none of them dare even talk about joining a union because the coal companies can simply get away with shutting everything down and saying, screw it. Labor law? What labor law?
Well,
and it's that way the country over. You don't dare stand up for yourself.
Laws are for those who must adhere to them. And those that must adhere to them are those that don't have the bucks. You remember?
Well, there's an extension, Cossack, of that tremendous passage from Thucydides, from the Melian Dialogue. You know, there was great big Athens threatening to squash little bitty, can't remember, And the statement is made, great nations do as they wish, small nations do as they must.
Correct.
Well, that's transferable. Great people, monetarily wealthy people, do as they wish.
Correct.
The non-wealthy do as they must.
You remember more than a few years ago, it was one of the DuPonts who ended up murdering the weightlifter.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? Now, if any of our class had been in that situation, I guarantee if we managed to dodge the death penalty by any stretch of the imagination, we'd be sitting in a dark, dank cell for the next 50 or 60 years of our lives, at least. This guy goes off to a mental institution. Money has its privileges.
Right.
Especially great money.
You think this guy that took a couple of pot shots at the White House will get that treatment?
Not hardly.
And, of course, the other thing that will not happen with this guy who took a couple of pot shots at the White House, nobody's going to talk about the fact that he is a religiously insane person.
Right.
Did you read about the tattoo on his neck?
Hmm.
Yeah, he's got a tattoo on his neck. It's almost like something out of a Monty Python skit. Yeah, it's tattooed on the back of his neck. The word Israel.
Oh, boy.
He's got another tattoo on his chest or his back or somewhere of a pair of praying hands working a rosary.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, no, not crazy. Religious. Just religious. Hey, Cossack, I got a roll, brother. We got them all stacked up, and I appreciate you getting us started.
All righty.
All right. You take care.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from North Florida, where... Northwest Florida, where it does, in fact, get cold. Email coming in from Kim. Simply subject lined unions. Bob, I have been a member of the local 652 Automakers Union since 1977. I've had a front row seat watching my lifestyle go to hell because of all the union breaking. Enough said. I pray that I will have some form of insurance left to me year by year. I watched the USA change from the inside out. Signed, Kim. That, and see, it's, yeah, not, no foreign invader. The middle class, the working class, and I saw this referenced as well, and I thought it telling. I was over at Comment is Free on the Guardian site, and I saw a UK commenter noting, you know, here in the UK, we say working class. In the United States, they insist on referring to middle class and lower class. We need to change that dialogue. The 99% are the working class. Even if you're making $150,000, $175,000 a year in some sort of theoretical management position in a high-tech company, you're still working class. Because you can still be fired on a moment's notice. And when and if that happens, your world goes to hell in a hurry. Just worth noting. Thank you, Kim. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Okay, so we're going to try this again.
Yeah, because we got cut off last night, Tracy.
Well, my battery died on my phone.
Oh, so.
This time I cannot blame AT&T. It was user error this time because I did not have enough juice on my phone. But anyway, how you doing?
Just setting them up, knocking them down, getting from one day to the next.
Yeah.
One day at a time, sweet Jesus. One day at a time.
Yeah, it's at that point where, you know, I in my travails as a cab driver, listening to crazy white people, it tickles me. When I get a Republican in my cab, because it's like, oh, Jesus, you know, thank you, because you have just given me a reason to live, and now I'm going to rip this guy a new one. It makes my day. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when you go to the zoo and you poke at the bear, and you're having great fun at it. That's kind of how I feel when I get these people in my cab. I don't even know how it happened. I don't know how we got onto politics or anything like that, but, you know, we got into about the Occupy, you know, LA and all the Occupy movements, and he's like, you know, I'm tired of these people who feel like they're having a, you know, their way in America that they're going to be able to make the kind of money that I make and stuff like that. I'm like, really? So you feel that in this America today, that, and this is a guy in probably his 60s. So who had the opportunities that, like you said, and when you and Kofak were speaking, there's no such thing as upwardly mobile anymore. The only way you can make money now is really if you get lucky and you can play a sport, or you can sing or something like that, and you get a multi-million-dollar contract, or you're a fucking Kardashian. And they're just useless. It's like, really? You know, so our conversation was about how these, you know, the 1% shouldn't have to pay their fair share. He said, well, what is their fair share? I'm like, I don't know, maybe, you know, seeing that they're probably using our rollway to transfer their, you know, force across the country, or how they're using our air, you know, using the same airways that we use to get back and forth and all that, why shouldn't they have to pay for that? I don't understand why they feel they don't have to. They dial 911 just like we, I mean, I know most of them probably have their own security forces and whatnot and so forth.
Yeah, private armies.
And they're private armies. But, you know, they still use the same, you know, same street, same thing and everything that we do. Why shouldn't they have to pay for it? And he was just like, well, they've paid everything for, and they, you know, they're making jobs. So what, where, okay, so, where are the jobs?
Yeah, see, that's a problem with that whole job creators thing.
Right. I'm like, where? I said,
well, there's too much uncertainty. We're still waiting to see what the super committee's going to do. But after the, but Tracy, after the super committee gets done, the super Congress, there's still going to be too much uncertainty.
Right.
You know, until the day that some sort of legislation is signed in the United States that says to the 1%, okay, you can have it all, then there won't be any uncertainty anymore.
And I'm waiting for that day. And basically, and so then we got on to, because I said, you know, how you, what is Paris guilty? What is her use? Why does she get to sit on her app? You know, look, I don't begrudge these people their money. Look, at some point, many, many years ago, these, somebody's great-great-grandfather who owned slaves, who got money back that way, or, you know, the rubber barons and all these other people who lied, stealed, and cheated their way into their financial position that they are today. They've had enough generations now that has cleaned up the money. But he's like, I said, well, so
that's a beautiful concept, though, Tracy. Intergenerational money laundering. That's what inheritance is.
And that's what it is. That is exactly what it is. You know, you look at the Kennedys, you know, God bless them. But look at how many, you know, I mean, it only took one generation, really, once, you know, but Joe was a freaking bootlegger. Come on, he was a gangster. You know, who got his son into the White House? And God bless him for it. You know, with money comes great power.
Carnegie's, Mellon's, Walker's, Bush's, the Rockefeller's.
Walton's, Walmart.
Yeah, Sam Walton, sure.
You know, so you've had enough people, enough, you know, to clean up the ugliness. But then the ugliness is still continuing. With Walmart, you have people that are working their asses off with no benefits. You know, horrible hours.
Yeah, Walmart, you know. Walmart just got done announcing that they were backing off on their health care. Now, you had to work like a dog and actually have near full-time wages to be able to afford Walmart's pissant health care in the first place, Tracy. But now it's almost completely out of reach.
Exactly. So the ugliness, and you have, you know, with the coal miners and all this, the ugliness still continues, but it's called the free market system. Am I wrong in saying?
No, the free market capitalism is the definition of the ugliness.
It's the ugliness. The ugliness is continuing. It is no longer called slavery and whatnot and so forth. It's called free market. It's called capitalism.
Well, you know, you and I haven't had a lot of conversations lately, and I don't know if you were listening back when I mentioned it, but I saw a statistic recently that stopped me in my tracks and made my blood run cold, Tracy. And
oh,
it
God.
Is this.
Nope. Okay.
There are more African Americans in prison in the United States today than there were slaves in the South in 1860.
No, I hadn't heard that one, but I told you.
See, that's the stuff that nightmares are made of.
That's the stuff. Well, I'm currently reading a book called Is Marriage for White People? And basically, it's about the decimation of the, you know, the black family, if there was ever truly a black family. And how black people don't get married, which tickles the hell out of me, because they were the biggest ones that were against Prop 8, doing for Prop 8 and the saving of the marriage. I'm like, motherfuckers.
Yep.
Yeah,
And you, by the way, you just got some kudos in from our buddy Jim. He said, "Well spoken, Tracy." And you mentioned something that just lit, well, opened a little door for me, and I have to share this with you because you were talking about what you were reading. I have to recommend a poet to you.
Okay.
I was checking my email earlier today, and I got an email from one of my friends in the anti-mountaintop removal movement, and this is she is a professor at the Department of English of the University of Kentucky, and her name is Nikki Finney, N-I-K-K-Y Finney, F-I-N-N-E-Y.
Okay.
And she just won the National Book Award for a book of poetry called Heads Off and Split. And she is, and the word that is used to describe her is that she is an Afrolachian poet.
Now, Afrolachian?
Afrolachian.
So she's a black woman from Appalachia?
She is a woman of color from Appalachia.
Awesome!
You want to hear a poem?
Please!
Okay.
Please.
Here's one called Left.
This is a poem called Left. And it's for New Orleans. The woman with cheerleading legs has been left for dead. She hot paces a roof 4 days, 3 nights. Her leaping fingers, helium arms rise and fall, pulling at the weak old baby in the bassinet, pointing to the 82-year-old grandmother, fanning and raspy in the New Orleans Saints' folding chair. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. 3 times a day, the helicopter flies by in a low crawl. The grandmother insists on not being helpless, so she waves a white handkerchief that she takes on and off her head toward the cameraman and the pilot, who remembers well the art of his mirrored-eyed posture in his low-flying helicopter. Bong son, dong ha, ple ku, Chulai. He makes a slow Viet Cong dip and dive, a move known in rescue as the observation pass. The roof is surrounded by broken levee water. The people are dark but not broken, starving, abandoned, dehydrated, brown and cumulus but not broken. The 400-year-old anniversary of observation begins. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. The woman with pom-pom legs waves her uneven homemade sign. Please help, please. And even if the E has been left off the please, do you know simply by looking at her that it has been left off because she can't spell and therefore is not worth saving? Or was it because the water was rising so fast there wasn't time? Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch up. The low-flying helicopter does not know the answer. It catches all of this on patriotic tape, but does not land and does not drop dictionary or ladder. Regulations require an E be at the end of any please before any national response can be taken. Therefore, it takes 4 days before the National Council of Observers will consider dropping one bottle of water or one case of dehydrated baby formula on the roof where the E has rolled off into the flood, but obviously not splashed loud enough. Where 4 days later, not the mother, but the baby girl, but the determined hanky waver whom they were both named for and after has now been covered up with a green plastic window awning. Pushed over to the side, right where the missing E was last seen, my mother said to pick the very best one. What else would you call it, Mr. Every Child Left Behind? Anyone you know ever left off or put on an E by mistake? Potato, potato. In the future, observation helicopters will leave the well-observed South and fly in Kanye West was finally right formation. They will arrive over burning San Diego. The fires there will be put out so well. The grandmothers were right about everything. People who outlived bullwhips and Bull Connor, historically afraid of water and routinely fed to crocodiles, left in the sun on the sticky tar heat of roofs to roast like pigs, surrounded by 40 feet of water in the summer of 2005, while the richest country in the world played the old observation game, studied the situation, wondered by committee what to do, counted in private by long historical division, speculated whether or not some people are surely born ready, accustomed to flood, famine, fear. My mother said to pick the very best one, and you are not it. After all, it was only Poe, New Orleans, old bastard city of funny spellers, non-swimmers, with squeeze box accordion accents, who would be left alive to care.
What do you think of that?
Well, I was just waiting for the last the part, you know, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, picking.
Yeah. And therein lies the art.
And it's just like, you know, like my conversation with my clueless white customer, my privileged white customer that I dropped off in Palos Verdes estate. And he, I said, well, you know, because we got onto, you know, once I asked him about where the jobs and, you know, well, you know, he said that stupid lie about what we're waiting. I said, well, where were the jobs when Bush was in office? I mean, did you guys have certainty then? He was your president and you still didn't, there was still no job. Oh, and before I forget, you know, with this whole Solyndra thing, let's just say one thing, Enron.
Yeah, there's, you know, that.
How much money, government money was pumped into Enron? And you know, granted, I don't know everything that was happening with that company with the solar panels, but I don't think how many people lost everything because of that company going under. But,
well, see, that's the very thing. The government guaranteed the debt, and therefore nobody lost their shirt.
That's what I'm saying. So the debt was guaranteed, but people who put everything, employees, investors, and everything into Enron lost everything. But you don't hear
them
screaming.
Well, but Ken Lay didn't, and the rest of the boys at the top didn't, because they got to bail out early. Look, it's like this nasty ass congressman from Alabama. I don't know if you've heard, but the story on 60 Minutes was quite compelling this past Sunday. The guy's name is Spencer Baucus, and he had insider information when Wall Street was getting ready to go to hell. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and promptly made short bets on basically Wall Street.
And he is now sitting on how much money?
I don't have the figure, but let's say he didn't lose.
He's not. As I'm sitting here...
And he's not under indictment.
No.
And there's nobody with pitchforks and torches outside his office down in Alabama because he's got conservative family values.
And then again, here I am, the girl who was on probation for 10 years.
Well, I tell you what, I'll save this story until you and I hang up because... it will be just probably too much for you to deal with. And that's not me being an asshole.
No, I'm just at this point, well, I'm at the point now, Bob, where I'm, you know, I am getting back into my fighting weight. I'm down damn near 20 pounds, and I've been running. But here's the funny thing. Here's the irony. I went to the doctor because I've been having swollen ankles and stuff. They ruled out that there's something wrong with my heart, and we did the ultrasound on my legs, no blood clots or anything like this, like that. But here's the funny part. I have developed situational asthma.
Hell.
In the course.
Well, we in coal-producing Appalachia apologize sincerely.
I have developed asthma. So I am now on, you know, whatever. I'm just different stuff. But I'm fine. It's just, I'm like, where the hell was the asthma when I was in high school and did not want to dress for PE?
Yeah. Only you, Tracy. Only you.
That puts me in the file of the only to happen to Tracy file that I am 45 years old and I don't smoke. I was one of what you call like a casual situational smoker. I smoked back when you could smoke in bars, and is that since I...
Oh, you smoked... Yeah, you smoked that OPC brand.
Right.
Other people's, you know, cigarettes.
Pretty much, you know, and that was...
That's all right. We know you. We know your type.
I'm not... that was me, you know. So I, you know, there's nothing, you know, that I should, but it's just the air in L.A. and the fact that, and on top of the fact that because because once I found out I had asthma, of course I did all the research, you know, I'm doing the major research, and being overweight does help contribute to adult onset asthma. So all my friends out there that are overweight, you know.
Yeah, so does some, but Tracy, so does something called P25.
Oh, yes. And, you know, well, hell yeah.
Well, I got to tell you about P25.
What is P25? Is that something from the mountaintop removal?
Well, it's from coal. Okay. It is a particulate matter of ultra teeny tiny itsy bitsy, I mean little, impossibly little size. And therefore, when it gets into your lungs, well, it goes deep into your lungs.
Okay.
Okay. And the EPA, remember the EPA that's killing jobs?
Yeah,
that EPA.
Yeah, the ones that my customer was saying is because of all these regulations, and I'm like, I try to catch myself, but then I don't. And I was like, what fucking regulation has affected your job? Name me one regulation from the EPA.
Well, yeah, I mean there is this one problem about all of that. And that is that it is proven, although God forbid you should get because the truth ain't in them, God forbid you should get a pig licking to admit it. It is mathematically proven. No getting around it. It's just reality. I know Republicans don't like it. But EPA regulations create jobs.
But when I asked him what one EPA regulation affected his company and kept his company from making money? This one. They need one. And I said drastically, like, you'd have to fire people because of the cut in the profit, and that, you know, people would, you know, and he couldn't name, he got quiet. And that's my, you know, look, I like the fact that when, you know, even though I have developed asthma at 45 years old, but I think about the fact how much worse off my breathing would be if there was no such thing as the EPA. I mean, remember, both of us are, you know, circling around 50.
Yeah, you're in L.A.
And so, small capital of the world. I remember back when I was in school, we could not go outside because the smog was so bad that it would burn your lungs. Your eyes would start to water. We had smog alerts.
Right, and see what I was going to tell you about is that a lawsuit was filed yesterday, Tracy.
Oh no!
Against the EPA because the EPA will not go forward with what it was mandated by the court to do, and that is to tighten standards on what is called soot. Okay, and well, that's what we're talking about with this PM2.5 standard, and this comes from coal-fired power plants. It comes from tailpipe exhausts. It is nasty. And it's killing about 37,500 Americans per year.
Per year. But, again, and like I said, see, these are the things that aren't even being taken care of. And could you imagine how much worse off we would be if we didn't have what regulations we do have in place?
Right, there is a need for more to be done, but the Obama EPA, you know, and remember, it's the Obama administration's Office of Management and Budget that is just terrorized by the big pollution industries.
Pussies.
According, it would save Americans $281 billion per year. According to a new report from Earth Justice, the American Lung Association, and the Clean Air Task Force. Okay?
Do you think with a B?
B. Billion with a B. And it would prevent 35,700 premature deaths if PM2.5, fine particulate matter, was regulated as it was mandated to do under a deadline that had been previously set.
Well,
Now, here's the paragraph you want to hear.
Okay.
While not considered a hazardous pollutant by EPA standards, and we understand why those standards are what those standards are, there's been a growing amount of scientific evidence, we don't know nothing about no evidence, supporting PM2.5's health risks, including, here's the list, respiratory and heart diseases, aggravation of asthma, and diabetes. A chunk of PM2.5 is about 1/30th the width of a human hair. And it's so tiny, it gets by all of the body's little traps and filters for keeping it out of your system and runs deep. Even just a few hours of exposure can aggravate lung disease, asthma attacks, acute bronchitis.
And what do I have? And what do I do for a living, Bob? What am I...
Yeah, you sit in traffic, don't you?
I sit in traffic and inhale fumes from other people's cars, not excluding the vehicle, my own vehicle. So I am a sitting duck. And I sit here as I'm looking at my inhaler and I'm going, I still haven't really, I have such horrible rhythm and hand-eye coordination. Because, I guess you got to breathe out and then inhale. And I can't get the damn rhythm down for using my inhaler.
Keep practicing. You will.
Well, somebody said something really vile, and you can only imagine what they said about, because...
Don't have to go far, right.
Yeah, because that's what, and I'm like, they offered to help me practice. And I'm like, this is why. Oh, before I forget,
Tune into PBS on Saturday nights to the Lawrence Welk reruns, and when Lawrence says a one and a two and a three, yeah, right there. just have your inhaler ready, and yeah, it'll all be great.
Well, it's the funniest thing because, like I know a lot of it. I know some of it has to do with my weight. But the crazy thing is, I have lost 20 pounds, and then I start getting health issues. health issues. But I'm not going to give up. My friends are like, you're working out. I just have to. Work with my doctor. It's like, you cannot run until we get this figured out. We got to start doing breathing treatments and woo-doo-woo, woo-doo-woo. But he's like, you can still go walking and stuff like that. I said, okay, fine. It's just, I've worked.
Yeah, but you would be well advised henceforward to pay attention to the air quality updates on your, local live at the 20s radio broadcast.
And these are things that, I haven't thought about the, air quality management in years because, like I said, we haven't had a smog alert since I was in high school. And that was 25 years ago. So these things work. And this is, I'm glad we, because I don't want to go and live in a country like Somalia and all these other places with no government at all.
Well, you don't have to, Tracy. Stick around. It's coming to you, because remember, Somalia and Haiti are the natural outgrowths of capitalism and free marketism run rampant. It was at the beginning of this conversation that you and I made mention of the 1%'s private armies. Well, what do the warlords have in Somalia?
Private armies.
And why pay the private army when you can just co-opt the taxpayers' law enforcement and get them to do it for you?
Exactly. It's one of those things where if you keep, like I said, like my mommy always says when I would make fun of her about something like, glasses or, moving a little slower and all this, she's like, just keep living. And at the rate we're going, we're not going to have any work. We're not going to have any clean air. We're not going to have any clean water. We're not going to, I got several offers yesterday to move to Canada. I was told that, because I was in the Skype chat last night after I got back from the doctor, and I guess it was Mark from Canada, and they're like, just move to Canada. We'll find you. we'll find you a guy, you get married, and just come to Canada. I'm like,
yeah, just a little too complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is it snows.
Well, there's that, and you know what? I don't know if they got any taco trucks in Canada either, Tracy.
See,
just
saying. You know, even though I have, you know, I am eating much healthier and all that, and I am learning different ways to make my tacos and this whatnot and so forth, I still have my fun with my, you know, once a week, I do my thing. I go, you know, do my deep-fried shrimp taco or whatever. They don't have that up in Canada. And see, you know,
you realize I'm going to get the Canadian emails now, right?
Yeah, and I know that if I go into the Skype room tonight, I'm going to get hell. But, baby, it snows. And I don't care if you say it snows for a week or a day. The bottom line is, colored folks, we don't do good in the cold. I mean, how many Negroes do you know that live in Minnesota on purpose?
Keep my mouth shut. I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
North Dakota, South Dakota. First of all, you know,
But hey, you know, the Packers played the Vikings the other night, and it was only 46 at kickoff at Lambeau.
46 degrees? Did you say 46 degrees?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that tells you something.
46 degrees.
Yeah.
See, I mean, and granted, it's...
You know, the frozen tundra was only 46 degrees.
It's only 46 degrees? Look. I start bitching when it gets below 70, okay? You know, I break out my parka at 65. I mean, no, seriously. It does get cold here. I mean, we have gotten nights that, I mean, in comparison to the west of the country, no. But for L.A., we have gotten nights in the 30s. And it has dipped into the 30s and in the 40s. It has happened. It doesn't happen often, but it happens often enough that I know that I could not survive in another city or state. Besides, see, we're, you know, like again, remember 45 circling 50. I'm at that age. If I slip, we're going to break a hip. And we're, you know, if there's somewhere with ice and stuff, the likelihood of me slipping and breaking a hip in Canada is far more high than me slipping and on ice in L.A. I'm sorry. You know, I can't do it. And I won't do it. You know, and I'll go visit Canada, and I'll go hang out and, you know, and wave.
But you're coming home before the snow flies.
But exactly. You know,
I do have a piece of practical advice for you coming in from David in Tennessee.
Yes.
He says when the air gets really, really bad there, if you can find an affordable indoor pool, the air is a ton better. And usually there are workout classes centered around swimming and shallow end aerobic routines. And that's the way to go. That's how you don't break the hip.
We do remember, like you said, you know, historically black folk, we in water. Mm-mm. I mean, I do swim. I'm not a strong swimmer, but I can stay afloat. But, you know, you don't see many black folks on the Olympic swim team. But shallow water.
True enough, but that's what the shallow end's for.
And that's what the, as long, because I do panic. If I get somewhere and I'm swimming or I'm in a pool or a lake or what have you, and my foot, you know how you walk and everything's fine?
And then you slip?
And then you slip and there's that little part that your feet no longer touch, your feet don't touch the bottom and your head is not above water. See.
Yeah.
You know, see. I will freak out, but I know you have a whole lot of other people to talk to, and I'm stalling because I'm supposed to be going to my doctor's office to see what kind of hell and the draconian device.
Yeah, what fresh hell is this? Yeah, I know.
What fresh hell is this? But, you know, I miss you guys, and I, you know, it's so funny because every time I get ready to listen to you, you know, off air or something, you know, traveling and stuff, so I am so very happy that the one day that I finally remember call in, I not only got to hear you, but I, you know, I got to talk.
Well, the rest of the week is that, well, tomorrow's the same way, and then I guess we'll be taking Thursday and Friday off of next week for Thanksgiving.
You know, I can't, because see, remember, I started, like I said, I've been working out, I started Weight Watchers, and I'm not going to cook this year. Well, I don't have to cook because I'm not going anywhere, and, you know, because I make a macaroni and cheese with, like, 10 cheeses, and, you know, you know, and I do the homemade rolls and the stuffing with the homemade cornbread and all the stuff, you know, and the sweet and the candy yams that really are pretty much, you know, with butter, brown sugar, and, you know, the stuff. I try to
add something to the Thanksgiving menu every year, and this year it's going to be low country red rice.
Low country
red rice.
That sounds pretty yummy.
Oh, it is. It is. You would go crazy.
And here's the deal. I have decided that next fall I am going back to school to go to cooking school.
Oh.
And yes, because my thing is, I cannot walk and chew bubble gum at the same time. So I can only focus on one major thing at a time. And right now, my major thing is to get back in shape and lose weight, because that's major. I'm not going to get involved this year with very minorly involved with the election this year. I will do as much as I can, but I'm not going to get as involved as I did in 08. So by fall of 2012, I should be to my goal weight and able to, you know, get a decent relationship with food so I can learn how to cook good stuff without my abs expanding to the point where I have to grease myself up to get in and out of a car. Hello?
No, just that you...
Shut up. I walked into that one. Shut up. Stop.
No. I get that, though. I mean... I was riding somewhere with somebody that had a very, very small car.
Ooh.
And it was just getting into the passenger seat was a brutal experience.
It's, you know, when Pete, you know, I don't know if any of, you know, who's listening and if anybody's gone to Weight Watchers and, you know, we have the meetings. It's basically, you know, AA for fat folks. I'm sorry, people who need to lose weight. And one of the questions they go, you know, they ask around if you want to share. What was the deciding factor? What made you finally say, okay, enough? So here is my deciding factor, and on this note, I'm sitting on my couch, and I happened to glance down and realize that I was able to use my stomach as not only a armrest, but a table. And at that point, and the factor, I think I told you.
There had to be some amens in the room at that point.
Yeah, and at that point, and then, you know, coupled with the story that I told you about the lady that I was helping out of my cab that almost fell on me, and I could only hear Red Fox's voice from Harlem Nights. Watch it quick, you're fucking with a heavyweight. And I'm like, I was on my way to getting that big, and I'm like, I don't ever want to be that big. And I don't want to have... I don't want to be at that, because I was not far away from having to do the two airline seats, you know, and I'm like, this is ridiculous that I have to use a handicapped bathroom because I'm too big to get into a stall for a regular sized person. So that was my bitch, get your fat ass up. This, you know, these are the conversations mm-hmm. that you have with yourself. Get your fat ass up and do something about it. And like I said, I'm down 20 pounds. I'm down 2 pant sizes. I still have a ways to go, but I'm starting to look like me again. I'm starting to feel like...
And I know that feeling of satisfaction. My weight loss came through nothing quite so conscious. There's nothing quite like living on nothing but water and pain pills for eight days.
Yeah.
But I shucked 25 pounds. Have not had a beer... since before the 15th of September.
I haven't had a soda since August.
And that's kind of brutal. But you can feel it going away. So, you know, I just want to give you support and props and just a big we're proud of you and stick with it, you know?
Because I got to get cute. I mean, I'm already cute as hell. You know, that's...
Well, hell, we can tell that on the radio.
I'm cute as hell, but like I said, I gotten too big, and eventually, you know, I have my wonderful son, and eventually I'm gonna be a grandma, and I want to see my grandbaby, You know, I want to see my great grandbabies if possible, and I can't do that if I'm overweight. So on that note, I love all y'all. I miss all y'all, and I promise, I won't disappear like I do. I'm good at that, and I get yelled on at that.
It's like submarine movies. Just send a single ping once in a while, just to let us know that you're out there on patrol, okay?
That makes me laugh. I'm going to get my inhaler.
Tracy, you take care, dear.
Oh, do me a favor. Put me on hold so I can, because, you know.
Yeah, okay. I can do that. All right. Stand by.
All right, baby. Thank you.
Bye now. Tracy calling from a cab in the wilds of L.A. Hey, welcome
hey
to the
there.
Program. Hey, Susan.
First of all, your remark about heart. Two words, Mick Jagger.
Well, yeah, I mean, he, sure. How about one word, me? Not that I was ever going to win any beauty contests, but there's a big debt. We've actually got a photograph of me at the tender age of 23 hanging on the wall, and you wouldn't recognize him next to a picture. No.
Yeah, let's face it. Incredibly talented. Their cover of The Battle of Evermore, I swear to God, it's better than the one Zeppelin put out. I listen to it constantly. You can't beat Heart.
Oh no. And like I said, I'm gonna turn Ferg onto that one riff and it'll be cool to hear him play in it.
Yeah. Now, the reason I called, the main reason, is did you by any chance happen to catch the friend of Oberman?
No, I did not.
That.
No.
Okay, well he had an interesting guest yesterday.
Yes.
And she is all over the web today. Her name is let me make sure I get this right. She is an 84-year-old granny.
Ah, she's the lady who was pepper sprayed in Oakland.
Yeah. Seattle.
Seattle, I'm sorry, yes, Seattle.
Her name is Dorley Rainey. And the picture of her, seconds after she was sprayed with pepper spray dripping down her face, being held up by on one side by an Iraqi war vet, recently discharged, who, by the way, saved her from getting trampled, and another guy, is all over the front pages of the papers and all over the world. The Occupy movement now has a new icon.
Yeah.
And this woman, boy, she got on Oberman and she came right out and compared these people to Goebbels. Now, the reason she can get away with that, she watched Goebbels.
She remembers Goebbels.
Yes, she does.
And again, Susan, that points to the value of what I refer to as transgenerational wisdom. And it is the transmission of transgenerational wisdom that makes all the difference in the world. And God knows we need more of it.
Yeah, they cannot say, you're just pulling that up. No, and she's standing there citing the names of the papers, the propaganda organs in Nazi Germany that used to put out the propaganda at Goebbels' order. And I'm sitting in my chair cheering because this woman is just incredible. And then what she does, you're not going to believe this. She gets her food. She doesn't go to the hospital like the pregnant lady did. She gets the stuff neutralized off her face. And she gets on her bus and starts to go home. Well, you know, you just had your face sprayed with pepper spray. It's going to look like a mess. And the 30-some-odd people, all who knew her from this bus, freaked out. And so she was given an opportunity to educate every one of them.
Beautiful.
So she did. Now, that's what I call a...
That's what I call a patriot, Susan.
dang straight. Now, there is a link on the show, on today's show post. If you go to the show post, in the post itself, there is a link to that interview. I couldn't actually embed it in the show post.
Okay.
There's a link to it. And some people can get, people can link to it and watch it, and it's a gas to watch. It is just fabulous.
Well, hopefully they will go and listen after the show. Emphasis on after the show.
After the show, yes. I do also want to mention, if people have not gotten the idea yet, and this goes back to what the nice lady from Seattle, God bless her, from Seattle, just to ties in with it. The Occupy Wall Street movement had a library of some 5,000 books. When they came in and raided the park, they confiscated all those books and computers and stuff. They said, oh, you can pick them up at this warehouse. The entire reference section was gone, which included several copies of the Constitution. They got back maybe a couple hundred. The rest of them were destroyed. Who does that sound like? Destroying books?
Yeah, there's a history.
Yeah. Pay attention, folks. History repeats itself, and it's beginning to repeat again. And it's easier to pull a weed if it's small. It would have been real easy to stop Adolf Hitler when he first started. Instead, it took a world war. Think about it. You can stop them now, or you can stop them later when it's going to get really ugly.
Yeah, Randall, writing from Pennsylvania, just sent me a note just saying, the riot police hate our freedoms.
Oh, yeah.
And that phrase is applicable. You know, it's. I remember when George W. Pinhead said, Al-Qaeda hates us for our freedoms. Well, that was a bunch of BS. They hated us because we were on their sacred Saudi sand.
Exactly.
But the riot police, who are in the service of the 1% and haven't enough shame to even feel bad about it, hate us for our freedoms. They don't like freedom of speech. They don't like freedom of assembly.
And what gets me is they haven't got enough brains to understand what happened to the brown shirts. When Adolf Hitler didn't need the brown shirts anymore, he had them killed. Pay attention, you guys. When you aren't needed anymore, you're gone.
June 1934, I do believe.
Yeah. Now, I'm gonna leave you with one quote.
Okie doke.
John F. Kennedy. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable.
Exactly.
Think about it.
Indeed. Susan, have a wonderful evening, dude.
Ancestors, your key. I keep hearing bagpipes. They're coming back. They're coming up.
Yeah, my Scots ancestors. I just keep hearing four.
Yeah, but with mine keep
cranky. No, mine got cranky too. I know what you're talking about.
They're getting really cranky because all of mine were Highlanders and they got pretty much, well, having genocide done a number of, well, yours were same thing.
Yeah, we ran away for a reason.
Mine were shipped off.
Well, mine were the original illegal immigrants, so, yeah.
No, mine weren't illegal. Mine, when the U.S. was still a penal colony, that's when mine arrived. Because they were the families of the 45.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. My bunch was snuck over here rather than having their heads separated from their shoulders. But they were snuck over here. They were illegals.
They actually managed to get away. Ha, cool.
Yeah, they were snuck out of the English camp in the dark and still of night.
Good for them.
Put aboard ship and goodbye now. Right if you find work.
Unfortunately, mine got rounded up, and their men, having been burned alive at Culloden, and they got rounded up. The little ones got, well, we won't talk about what happened to the little ones. They got shipped off as bond servants, which...
That's another word for slaves.
In the case of the women's... No, that was whores.
Well, you can go there, I can't. So,
well, they were female and they were up for sale. What would you call it?
True enough. Susan, have a great evening, dear.
Anyway, pay attention, folks. History is a bear.
It is indeed.
I'm talking to the already converted.
Right. This is turning around and preaching to the choir. But still, it's a nice reminder. Take care.
Yeah. Take care, honey. Love to everybody.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Here's Ninja Susan, calling from Oregon, and we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
You got me again, so
put you back on hold. That's right. That's crazy. Okay. Well, I ran through all of the... blinking lights that had turned into busy signals. You'll have that. You guys just sometimes there are patience issues, if I understand that. And maybe you don't want to run up the toll-free thing either. I understand that too. Thank you very much, by the way, for the kind contribution that came in a little bit ago. It is very much appreciated and very badly needed. Thank you. Now, I mentioned a story that probably was, that I suggested was probably best left until after my conversation with Tracy. And it's a brutal story. You know, just another lovely day in the land of the free and the home of the brave. It comes from... Taib blog, T-A-I-B-B-L-O-G, that's Matt Taibbi's blog at Rolling Stone. It's getting some play in other quarters as well, but this is the link that I got from Sandra. He writes, I had a quick piece of news I wanted to call attention to in light of the recent developments at Zuccotti Park. For all of those who say the protesters have it wrong and don't really have a cause worth causing public unrest over, see the AIG remarks that I mentioned earlier, consider this story sent to me by a friend on the Hill. It concerns a federal judge in Mississippi Stan and a woman named Anita McLemore, also a citizen of Mississippi Stan. It is an ugly story. The judge, the federal judge, obviously it is a criminal case, and the story is of an outraged federal judge by the name of Henry Wingate. Now, Henry Wingate is a federal district court judge for the Southern District of Mississippi Stan. I could go ahead and tell you the details of the case, and I would not need to tell you that this guy is a Ronald Reagan appointee. He is a graduate of Grinnell College in Iowa and a graduate of the Yale Law School. U.S. Senator Thad Cochran
suggested he be nominated to sit on the bench of the Southern District of Mississippi. September 11th, 1985. Kind of a dirty old bastard. He was criticized by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals a little over a year ago because he failed to enter a judgment in a case in which a person won a $1.3 million judgment on a 2002 jury verdict against his former employer. Wouldn't do it. He was in the service of the 1% and damned well meant to do what he could to protect his 1% former employer. He is notorious for refusing to resolve cases in his courtroom. And at present, he is presiding over the trial of a man who threatened to assassinate then-President-elect Barack Obama. Probably got a pretty good idea how he's going to run that trial, don't you? So anyway, Judge Henry Wingate, conservative, family-valued Republican, was the presiding judge in the case of an indictment against Anita McLemore. He just sent her up for 3 years hard-fed time on a charge of lying on a government application to obtain food stamps for her and primarily for her children. You see, in Mississippi, Stan, and according to federal law, if you have a record of criminal drug offenses, you are ineligible to have food provided to you by the government of the United States. States, you know, this is a states' rights issue, though. States are clearly allowed within the statute itself to opt out of that draconian measure and allow people who have had run-ins with drug problems to continue eating and not simply starve. Mississippi Stan did not choose to opt out of that system.
Let them eat their drugs.
You know, we've been through periods similar to this in America. There was a time during the Prohibition era when the government actually legally mandated that manufacturers of alcohol, there were still manufacturers of alcohol, and it would be periodically hijacked or stolen or whatever and put out on the black market. The federal government mandated that manufacturers of alcohol add a whole laundry list of deadly poisons to the alcohol so that the people who would drink it once it got bootlegged would just die. It brought about the deaths of some 12,000 American citizens. Well, in 2011 in Mississippi, Stan, if you've got drug convictions on your record, you, in the words of immoral, infamous Pastor Hagee, get to starve! Anita McLemore was alleged to have defrauded the government of the total of $4,367 in food for she and her children. She has two of them. She paid the money back. But when it came time for sentencing, federal judge Henry Wingate, family values Republican, decided not to take the option of sentencing Ms. McLemore according to the federal sentencing guidelines, which would have left her with a 2 to 8 month prison term followed by probation. Oh, hell no! Judge Wingate said he was outraged by the fraud that Anita McLemore had perpetrated against the United States, and sentenced her to 3 years hard-fed time. His sentencing order said, quote, "The defendant's criminal record is simply abominable. She has been the beneficiary of government generosity in state court." Now, Matt Taibbi juxtaposes this case against the case of Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and Deutsche Bank, who were also, as he notes, the beneficiary of government generosity. Taibbi notes Goldman got $12.9 billion in the AIG bailout. Citigroup got $45 billion and hundreds of billions in government loan guarantees. Not one single individual defendant from any of these fraud merchant corporations has ever seen the inside of the penal system of the United States of America. Gary Crittenden and Arthur Tildesley of Citigroup were fined $100,000 and $80,000 respectively for lying to shareholders about how badly in debt Citi actually was. Neither had to admit to fraud. Both got to keep their jobs. Square that up, as Matt Taibbi notes, against Anita McLemore, who paid the money back, every penny of it, and now gets to do 3 years hard time. But it's not just federal Judge Henry Wingate. It takes two to tango. And three, in court situations. God knows what kind of pathetic defense she had, Ms. McLemore. But the prosecution was brought by Barack Obama's Justice Department as run by Attorney General Eric Holder. The Obama administration prosecuted Anita McLemore. There's no way around it. The same Obama administration that has not prosecuted any of the monsters who ripped us off left and right and were beneficiaries of the United States government and still persisted in committing heinous financial crimes. David in Tennessee, just asking, reckon how many preachers have praised Judge Wingate for his very ethical stand? Well, God Almighty, there was, never mind the preachers, there was Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman a couple of weeks ago standing before the faithful saying, if a man will not eat, or if a man will not work, neither should he eat, starve! Wow. Just wow. But that's America. That's America where Corrections Corporation of America lobbies the Congress to make sure that it has a steady diet of prisoners coming into its system, for which it is paid the princely sum of $200 per night for each prisoner it warehouses. These are not prisons. These are human warehouses. They are, for all intents and purposes, concentration camps run for profit. And that is likely where Anita McLemore gets to go. But remember, as Texas Betsy notes, in the Obama administration, we don't look backward. Well, we do, but we only look backward if we're looking backward at some poor people who were trying to feed their children.
Been on the bench since 1985, Judge McLemore. Reckon he's ever read that little passage from Matthew about if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me? Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Well, one of them. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's Cassie.
Hey, Cassie.
Hey.
What's happening?
Hello?
Yeah, you're there. I'm here.
So first Susan conjured me and then you conjured me.
Oh, okay.
So, I have been reading a lot about Dorley Rainey. I listened to the interview last night and I've been reading about her and she is absolutely amazing. This woman has been an activist since the 1930s. She was in Germany in the 30s.
She lived it.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's been a liberal activist her entire life. And she was talking to Oberman last night, and one of the things that she said was that when she retired from her job, that she could have just sat home and eat bonbons, or she could have done something important with her life. She decided to not stop, to keep going.
Yeah.
So that's like really cool. Yeah. Here's what she said. Well, I'm going to retire. I'm going to sit around, watch television, or eat bonbons. But somebody has to keep them awake and let them know what is really going on in this world. Whether it's J.P. Morgan doing the financial plan for our ill-fated tunnel, which is coming up, which the city council is doing a bunch of stuff about the city council in Seattle. Well, I read the whole thing, and my eyeballs are still pink from reading it, and nobody talks about these things. They're not in the media, and the Chamber of Commerce pushes things like our tunnel because they earn big profits when they should start developing the property around there when the viaduct is done. And the taxpayers are on the line for this. And so I'm an issues person. I have always been an issues person.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she took her whole bus ride home to educate everybody on her bus about what was happening at Occupy Seattle. Yeah, they had never seen a real person that they could identify who got pepper spray. And it became a really wonderful educational opportunity for me to convert a busload of people to our way of thinking. I have a new hero.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, really.
And, I got to do something about that. Tell your friends. That's, when you've got a new hero, tell your friends. Share it.
Oh, I am. I'm completely... Yeah.
Do a blog post. Get her some,
Yes. I have to do blog posts. I have to blog more.
But when I heard you, I applied for a new scholarship. Oh, I got that email. I'm sorry. I meant to respond, and some things have been transpiring around here that have really consumed a great deal of our existence. And,
are you okay?
Yeah.
You're not sick again?
Well, I think I am getting sick again, but that's not the issue. It doesn't bear the detail.
Okay.
But suffice to say that we've been rather otherwise occupied.
Okay.
I'm glad you decided to go ahead and apply for that.
Yeah.
I think you've got a pretty good chance.
I hope so. I sent them my old blog. I sent them my high school blog and my college blog. So.
Awesome.
Because my high school one had a lot more posts, a lot more often. but anyway.
Well, because now you're, there's that again. You're working a lot harder. And you worked hard in high school.
I did. Anyway, I started calling when Susan called. But then your last thing while I was on hold, you were talking about...
Anita McLemore?
Yes. Okay. That's insane. That I can't... I mean, I can believe it.
Can we take it another step, Cassie? Can we say that such a thing is evil?
It is evil. It's absolutely evil. Because here's why it's evil. It's the most evil because we have voted for Obama because he was going to change the system. The fact that this happened in Mississippi is evil already, but it's evil that we expect. The fact that the Obama administration prosecuted this woman and will not prosecute anyone on Wall Street. And quite frankly, I'm really upset with Obama right now. Why isn't he getting on television and talking about, he did this kind of halfway with the protesters, and I understand why people from Occupy are upset and all of this. But that's all he did. He only did half. And then in the last 2 weeks, since the police have been beating everyone, and since they have been, did you hear where they were pushing the bicycles into the crowd? And I mean, every place, it seems like every single city where there's an Occupy,
there's an onslaught against them.
And where is Obama? Didn't he get out and defend his friend who was a victim of police brutality in Boston? Why can't he defend the rest of us? Didn't he do that? Didn't he get in all kinds of trouble for defending his friend? His friend was just a victim of wasn't even brutality. It was just being arrested on his porch for being loud.
Yeah, profiling, basically.
Right. But if he can defend his friend, why can't he defend the rest of us? And especially against what Mayor Bloomberg is doing, what all of these mayors are doing.
Against tyranny, Cassie. Against tyranny.
Against tyranny. Where is Obama?
Australia. That's where. Announcing that we're going to poke the Chinese with a sharp stick by having a marine installation in Darwin, Northern Territories, after all. Because we can afford that, right?
No.
No.
No. We have to spend our money putting...
Well, Lord, we can't afford $4,000... We can't afford $4,300 for a woman to feed her two children who just happens to have a drug rap sheet.
Yeah. Okay, we were on food stamps. Was it food stamps or was it WIC?
No, it's food stamps.
Okay, so we were on food stamps when I was a kid, and it was after my mom's first drug arrest.
Well, that must mean that Texas, surprisingly, opted out of that draconian federal rule.
Well, it actually means that my brother forged all kinds of signatures when he was 16 to get us on food stamps. But...
Wow.
My brother got us on food stamps and free lunch when he was 16.
What becomes of a country, Cassie? What becomes of a country that visits the sins of the parents upon the children? Isn't the whole history of Western civilization supposed to be the slow but steady process of getting away from that kind of antediluvian sadism?
I'll tell you where we end up as a country. We don't end up is with kids like me thinking well enough to get smart enough to go to Princeton. Because I know what it's like to go to school hungry, and I know what it's like to go to school and have breakfast and do well in school. And I was a holy terror in the fourth grade. I was an absolute holy terror. I got in fist fights. I was horrible. I was crazy.
Well, I guess you're lucky you weren't pepper sprayed.
Yeah. I could have been.
You know, arrested. We do that to fourth graders now.
I know, I could have been arrested out of my classroom. But it was not until I knew that my brother cared enough to make sure that I ate, and I knew that my teachers cared enough, that I started doing well in spite of what was going on.
How did that turn around, Cassie?
How did it turn around? I don't know. I think a lot of it is I liked school, and I liked the fact that if this was the rule on Tuesday, it was the rule on Wednesday also, which was not something that happened at home, and that I liked the fact that if the teacher gave you homework and said do all of the problems on page 45, that was what she wanted to see the next day.
Consistency.
It was
structure.
Yeah, it was consistency and structure and, yeah. Consistency and structure, and I was good at it. And I got rewarded for being good at it, and so I got better.
Well, I had a feeling we would I would hear from Andy in regard to your question, and I have. Andy, writing from California, says, tell Cassie that Mr. Obama is not defending the occupiers because he's not on our side. It's simple.
No,
he's on the side of the 1%. The 1% are his constituency. Please, Cassie, you must understand, Mr. Obama works at the privilege and beck and call of the top 1%. If he didn't, he wouldn't be there, i.e. in the big white house.
So who am I supposed to vote for? I mean, I can't vote against him, but I can't vote for him either. And I can't not vote. So
you may, well, under those circumstances, you may march in, you may march into the booth and vote for a lot of other candidates and leave it blank. You know, I'm still making this argument, Cassie, that it is how we as progressives respond in the primary that makes a difference. And of course, the audience
with all, running in the primary?
No.
Is there
no, but hear me out, please, okay? There's a substantial audience here for the horn. But it is by no means the millions that we need to reach, so you just hope that maybe the audience that we have here will tell two people and sort of become a force multiplier that way. But this is my theory. What happens in November 2012, we pretty much know what we're going to have. We're going to have Barack Obama, who is a servant of the 1%, and he is that because, as Andy says, he couldn't sit in the big White House otherwise. And we're going to have some Republican who is crazier than a sprayed roach. And that includes Willard Romney. But there will be a primary. New Jersey will have a primary. Texas will have a primary. Alabama, West Virginia, every state will have a primary, Cassie.
I have to vote in Texas, though.
Well, that's fine.
I mean, I vote absentee, but I can't.
Yeah, but in this scenario, it matters not. If every progressive in the United States, every person who calls themselves a liberal, would walk into that primary booth and vote for every down ballot race that was on there and leave the presidential primary, because Obama still has to run in the primary. He still has to be nominated by the several states. And if every progressive and liberal in this country would vote for every down-ballot race and leave Barack Obama's name blank, it would send a profound message to the White House of the number of people who are willing to sit it out, stay home, or leave it blank in November. And, you know, the statistics and the demographics are pretty accurate, and it would become obvious pretty quickly that the people who were doing that were his liberal base, who knocked on doors for him, who walked wards for him, who put signs in their yard for him, and have said, straighten up or get out. And that's the only strategy that I see, Cassie. And by the way, David in Tennessee just dropped a note and said, holy round word. He said, Cassie just said the most important thing ever on your show. And it was the remarks that you made that said, and go to Princeton. David in Tennessee said, that ain't gold. It's way more precious. When you said, I'll tell you the America that we will have, and it's going to be an America where Cassie doesn't get to go to Princeton. That was visionary, Cassie. That was profound. And that was a long look down a dark road with a lot of clarity on your end. And see, at 50, at 60, at 70... that ain't necessarily our America. We're the ones screwing it up. But it's you and your generation's America.
Well, we're trying to fix it.
Yeah. You know, that's your generation in large part at Zuccotti Park, in Oakland, Seattle.
I'm going to Zuccotti Park for Thanksgiving.
Excellent.
I'm part of a whole group of people that's going to Zuccotti Park and cooking on barbecue. Well, I don't know if it's Zuccotti Park. It would probably be, what do they call it, Foley Square. We're not sure I don't know where I'm going yet, but I'm going, and there is, I'm going to a soup kitchen to cook turkey and serve turkey and then bring it to the protesters and bring it to any of the homeless people who come to the park. But we still don't know which park it is. But that's not the problem.
No.
I will figure out how to get to whichever park it is.
And just to, you know,
that's
just to
what
go
I'm doing with my Thanksgiving.
Just to go back and you know what, I applaud you for your commitment to service. It is no less than what I would expect you to do. And not expect in the way of, you know, you must do this, but expect in the sense of I know that your morals will drive you and your ethics will drive you in the right direction. I want to go back with you, if we could, for just a minute, to the Mississippi case.
Yeah.
Because there's one other thing that has to be mentioned, Cassie. And that is that this woman has been prosecuted. Matt Taibbi did not bring this up. I haven't seen anybody else bring this up, and I've seen several manifestations of this story. This is a state that just recently tried to pass an amendment that said a fertilized ovum is a fully functioning human being.
But they won't feed children because their moms are on drugs.
Need we say more?
What hypocrite.
Oh, ye generation of vipers, comes to mind. Sorry, I was raised on that stuff. But that's what they are. That's what these right-wingers are. That's what these family values conservatives are.
But Mississippi did vote. I mean, to be fair, Mississippi got out and voted against that. But I think it's probably the same people who brought it up in the legislature who are the same people who...
And the governor says...
...who passed the law that said that women with drug convictions can't get food stamps. You know, you can't send food stamps on... I mean, you can sell your food stamps, but you can't really spend them on anything other than food.
Although
it only works on food.
There is a move afoot, however, Cassie, to allow people to use their food stamp benefits at McDonald's. There are actually pilot programs out there that are doing exactly that.
For corporate to support the corporate
machine. To support the 1%. Because the 1% want that, too. They're already getting the vast majority of the so-called SNAP benefits, but they want to make sure that they get it all, because, after all, you can use food stamp benefits at a farmer's market and buy fresh produce, and we can't have that. McDonald's and Yum Brands need that money instead.
How do you use it at a farmer's market?
It's legal. They process it, as I understand, they process it on paper. Every grocery store has paper forms to fill out in case the power goes down.
Okay. I didn't know that.
And some farmers' markets have the complete modem set up and so forth, as based on what I've read. But we can't have that now, can we? Because people need to be spending their food stamp benefits, those $3 a day, on the new $1.49 cheddar biscuit at Hardee's.
That's just wrong.
Bear in mind, take that $4,300 that Anita McLemore is now going to do 3 years hard time for. Divide it by three. And that's how many days... That's how many days, and then divide it by three again, and you have the grand total of days in which she and her two children were fed. And she is going to do hard time for 3 years in likely a for-profit penitentiary, for which the penitentiary will be paid $200 per day, not $3. And they will not spend $3 per day on her food.
Do you know Benny in your chat room?
Yes.
He showed me a graphic. I don't have it up at the moment, but he showed me a graphic a couple weeks ago about how much more it costs to put someone in jail than it costs to put someone on full scholarship through Princeton.
It's vastly more expensive.
It's a lot more. It's a lot more. My mother was my mother's last prison was a for-profit prison.
And by the way, Marty has a question for you, if that's okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Marty asks, before you turned your fourth grade year around, do you remember what you were eating before versus what you began eating afterwards? In other words, did nutrition play a role?
Yeah. We were eating very little before. We were eating what was in the house, if it was still good, if we knew how to cook it, if we could figure it out, if there was anything. And by the end of the year, we were eating two meals a day at school and taking fruit home from school.
Marty also noted, and this as well.
My teacher, I went to a school where everyone had a, not everyone, but most people had a lunchbox. And I've never said this before. I took an empty lunchbox to school, and then I took a lunchbox home with fruit and crackers and applesauce and whatever would keep from lunch until I got home. So we actually ate three meals a day from school. But one of the meals we took home in my lunchbox.
Don't ever be ashamed or embarrassed to tell those stories, Cassie. Because right wingers, more than anyone else, right wingers need to hear that reality.
You're supposed to take a full lunchbox to school and a half lunchbox or a empty lunchbox home. But I used to bring my lunchbox to school and then whatever anybody from my table got and didn't use, instead of putting it back on the tray or instead of putting it in the garbage, I just put it back in my lunchbox.
Wow.
But I brought an empty lunchbox to school. But that I was doing even before we were on free lunch. That was sort of how I was eating before that.
And by the way, I had a note in from David in Tennessee drawing a bright line comparison, and I think it's accurate. A bright line comparison between the lady I like to call the Angel of Seattle, the heroine of Seattle, and a woman...
Rainy?
Yes. and a woman of 100 years ago. Her name was Mother Jones. They are the same spirit, the same level of determination. Mary Harris Jones, Mother Jones.
Yeah.
Who, at an age similar, and I believe even older, did not shrink from standing up to the 1%, to the point that federal judges were scared to death of her. At one point, she was written up as being the most dangerous woman in America, all because she simply advocated that human beings be treated like human beings. That tradition exists in this country, Cassie, and as Marty just noted, he said, a powerful advocate Cassie will be. I think we need to get some bodyguards for her. She will be dangerous to the 1%. Marty sounds a little like Yoda in that. A powerful advocate Cassie will be. The Force is strong with this one, Cassie. And you make us proud. You always do.
I have one more question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the Seattle police knew who Mrs. Rainey was?
I'd give 60-40 against.
You think they just, because she was just at the front of the crowd, they just...
Right, and they, because they pepper sprayed a pregnant lady, several children, a priest. They were simply doing the bidding of the 1%.
Did you hear that in New York, a councilman, a city councilman, who was Hispanic, was arrested and kept for 17 hours?
Yes, and the borough president
couldn't get a, and he couldn't get the police. He couldn't get a police. He couldn't. He couldn't get a lawyer.
No.
And he told them who he was, and they wouldn't release him. And I don't know if it's the rest of the city council or if it's the mayor hasn't come out and said that what happened to him was wrong.
And of course, if it was done to him, how many others was it also done to? You can't evade that question.
There were 600 today.
Yes. And if with any justice, there will be 1,200 tomorrow and 2,400 the day after. That system, that repressive system has to be broken.
Okay, so I need you to do me a favor.
I'll try.
Would you ask in the Horn audience who lives near New Jersey that I can put their phone number? So when I go into New York for Occupy, I have a Lawyers Guild number.
Yes.
And permanent marker on my arm. But are there any Horn members, Horn listeners, whose number I could have if I needed it, if I got arrested over Thanksgiving?
I think you just asked that, and I have a feeling I'll get a number of emails because I can think of a number of people who will probably respond.
Because I'm kind of scared of that.
You would be delusional if you weren't, Cassie.
Okay. But I'm going anyway.
Absolutely. Fear is not the, remember, fear is the mind killer.
Yeah.
And it, what we do in the knowledge of fear is where the break point is between everyday life and heroism. You're not going to run up and scream F the pigs or anything and try to get arrested.
No.
You're going to try to feed people.
Yeah.
But even that, in a nation that is verging on full-on fascism, Cassie, can be dangerous. So just watch your back, eyes wide open, make sure you've got that NLG number on your arm in permanent marker, that's very smart, and I will bet you I will have some phone numbers for you in short order.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. We love you.
I love you, too.
Take care, Cassie.
And I hope everything's okay with the family.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. K Cassie at college. Wow. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I guess I'm going to just close out the show with you.
Okie doke. Oh, you're back.
I just finished my breathing treatment. I can breathe now.
All better?
Feeling a lot better. But, you know, I'm glad you put me on, you didn't have me on the phone when you were telling the story, because you know what my reaction would have been. And thank God for you.
Well, I hope I wasn't being, I wasn't trying to.
No, you were not. No, because the only difference between her, she and I, is that I only went to jail for 2 weeks, but I was on probation for 10 years. And I am now a felon because I'm guilty of trying to beat my child.
Right. In Mississippi, Stan, you get the 3 years hard time because the big white judge is incensed at your abuse of the system.
Yeah. So thank God I live in California. And not Mississippi, because it would have been a whole lot worse. But it's one of those things when you think about it and you try not to throw up, because you're going, what is wrong? How dare you penalize a woman for trying to take care of her children? How dare you penalize a woman because though she had a problem with drugs at one point, but that means her children don't get to eat?
Right, visiting the sins of the parents upon the children. That judge should be taken to the public square somewhere in Mississippi and have rotten vegetables thrown at him and publicly jeered and publicly shamed for the misanthrope that he is.
How dare you use vegetables? I'm thinking about that book, that short story by Shirley Jackson, The Lottery.
There you go. I know what you mean.
I'm hoping his name is Fool, because he needs pain. I am not a violent person by nature. I swear to goodness I'm not, but goddammit. When, you know, these assholes, like the AIG prick,
well, you know, they just don't understand what we had to go through and what would have happened had Wall Street failed and the floor. Did I get my right blue blood, blue chip accent? Did I get it down?
You're down.
Okay, so while you're getting your million-dollar bonuses and stuff like this, and you got people starving in the street, how dare you? How dare you when the decimation of the middle class, like I told you, like the book that I'm reading, Marriage is for White People, is basically talked about how the likelihood, how highly unlikely a woman of my age will ever marry. Thank God I have a kid. At least I don't have to worry about that. You know, I don't have to worry about the biological clock ticking. I have a wonderful son that I know will take care of me. But this 1% by itself has decimated the black family between incarceration, between the war on drugs, the outsourcing of labor jobs and whatnot and so forth. Wiped out of the possibility of many black women ever marrying a black man. So, you know, we don't understand why, you know, these people that don't understand why we're so about this group.
Yeah. Hey, Tracy, you're breaking up some. I hope we will continue the conversation, but between now and then, have yourself a good evening. And see, you can use that inhaler.
See, I'm getting my voice back, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
Anyway, may God bless y'all and keep y'all, and good night and be well.
All right, take care, Tracy.
You too, bye.
Bye now. Let's see if we can get... Oh, I just screwed up. I hung up on the last call we had. I apologize for that. But we will have at it tomorrow. Friday on the front porch will be around. And I hope you'll be joining in. Thank you to those of you who have contributed and helped out this evening. Like I've said before, it was badly needed and much appreciated. Thanks to everybody who makes the horn go. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie, and Sparky, who worked to get the chat room up and going this evening and provided a space in the Skype chat until that was available. ours was available. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. And hey to Gene's lovely new bride. Hi, Ann. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo, our op-ed columnist. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee. On-the-fly insight that I rely upon. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, technical guru, excellent host in his own right, webmaster, web designer, and general keeper of my technical sanity. Thank you, John. Thanks always go out to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. I'm serious. One of these days I'm going to get Ben on and we're just going to tell the whole story. WhiteRoseSociety.org of how he saved liberal talk on the Internet. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Join up. Be a part of the solution. And always, 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 Gina, cutie, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next.